I promise not to mumble into the microphone this week, Anthony.
The only time anybody ever's ever.
I promise that
said
I will speak clearly into
are
the
a
microphone.
Quiet mumbler.
Never in my life. Never in my life. Like I said on Twitter today, I'm going to forward that to the horrible fourth grade teacher that I had, Miss Paul, and I'm going to tell her, see, somebody out there doesn't think I'm loud, lady. Take it back.
Everybody else does.
Take it back. Yeah. 21 years later. Take it back, please.
I don't think they're going to take it back. Oh, okay. I think you're going to just be stuck with that one there.
Hey,
but
welcome in.
Hey.
It's episode number 68 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mon.
I'm Anthony Masterson.
Tyler Mumbles.
Tyler Mumbles Mon. the season preview of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast.
Welcome in.
And for the first time, we have run out of players and who had numbers.
That's amazing.
That can correspond to a Purple Dinosaur podcast. Although we will catch back up on number 71 with Chinwe Cao.
Episode 68. Chinwe Cao episode, by the way.
The entire Chinwe Cao episode. Also, next week will be number 69, the Cameron Goldner edition of the Purple Dinosaur podcast.
I can't believe we're a week away.
We're a week
nice
away
episode.
From the Cameron Goldner edition of the podcast. That's going to be a trip.
That was going to
today,
be a nice episode.
Yeah, number 68 in honor of the number of wins the Colorado Rockies had last year in 2015 and the mark, at the very least, they need to eclipse this season to make us not want to jump off a ledge on a daily basis. So 68.
That dovetailed very well, 68. To not have a player, but to have that be the win total from last year was really pretty amazing.
It was kind of perfect.
Pretty well. With that, big welcome in to the 68th edition of the show. We got a lot coming up for you today. A lot coming up for you. This is season three now of this podcast, if you can believe it. And we're pretty proud of what we've done in the past. This is our breakout prospect / breakout players. That's one of the things we always do in the season preview edition of the show. Before we get to those, though, there is some news of the day today that we should also get you to, which is this from the Associated Press, which is kind of a downer way to start.
Press.
To start
my
the show.
Goodness.
Maybe somebody from the Daily Planet contributed to this story. Just wasted 2.5 hours of my life. Not wasted.
2 hours and like 2 hours and like 54 minutes.
Yeah. Not wasted because I really thoroughly enjoyed just how terrible Batman vs. Superman was. But man, that was an awful, awful movie. Awful movie. So
good
anyway.
Luck. Having to rewatch that one for the rest of your life and your dreams.
From the Associated Press, quote, Maui prosecutors are moving to dismiss a domestic abuse charge against suspended Colorado Rockies shortstop Jose Reyes because his wife isn't cooperating. Deputy prosecuting attorney Carrie Glenn says she expects to file documents Wednesday to drop the case. Reyes's wife won't talk to prosecutors or return to Maui, she said. A quote from Glenn, quote, the complaining witness, Mr. Reyes's wife, is what we call an uncooperative witness. At this point, I have no other avenue for prosecution. So, Jose Reyes, who is not suspended, that is incorrect in this AP story. Jose Reyes has never been suspended. Jose Reyes, who just looks delightful in his little mugshot here from the Maui County Police Department on the AP story, was charged and set to go to trial on April 4th, he pleaded not guilty to abusing a family or household member. Remember, this was the story that came out. It was on Halloween night.
It was like 3 days after the Aroldis Chapman incident,
right,
which we did not know about at that time either.
We knew about the Reyes story first. Yeah, and we found out about the Chapman story later. Reyes was arrested on Halloween. He allegedly grabbed his wife by the throat and shoved her into a sliding glass door at a hotel. That was according to the TV station KHNL in Hawaii. And a 911 call, a security person from that hotel asked another person to describe her injuries. And then he said, quote, in her face and on her left leg. She has some scratches on her neck as well. But again, Reyes pled not guilty, and now his wife is not cooperating. There are a whole ton of reasons as to why Jose Reyes' wife would not be cooperating with this investigation, would not want to return to Maui. There's a ton of stuff that goes into that. We are certainly not going to pass judgment or blame her for not wanting to go through a criminal case like this. It's an awful situation. It's a terrible thing that happened to her. Jose Reyes, I think for most Rockies fans at this point, If nobody ever saw Jose Reyes again in Major League Baseball, I don't think anybody would miss him.
So, I think he's got Wilton Lopez status with Rockies fans right now.
Yeah, except far worse because he's like an actual horrible
person. He's just an actual terrible person.
If these allegations
Wilton Lopez
are true.
Just sucked. Yeah. Yeah. Wilton Lopez just wasn't good.
If the allegations are true. Wilton Lopez was just terrible at baseball. So that's the news from Major League Baseball. Now, what this means for the Rockies, we're not really sure yet. Because, as Anthony pointed out on Twitter today, this does not really have a precedent. Aroldis Chapman was suspended 30 games.
Without being charged for firing a gun 8 times.
Like, exactly.
The Miami police are just, my God. Anyway.
So no charges there, and he was still suspended 30 games. There were charges filed here. And now it's not going to go to trial. The case looks like it'll be dropped. So not really sure what that means. The Rockies' outstanding PR guy, Warren Miller, said the team had no immediate comment. They're expected to wait until Major League Baseball decides on discipline before addressing the issue. That's according to the Associated Press. This is what sucks about the situation for the Rockies. The Rockies really have no, to quote George Costanza, they have no hand. They can't do anything with a contract. Yeah. They can't impose a punishment. This all goes through Major League Baseball now.
They hope that the punishment is severe, I would imagine, at that point. I mean, the recourse now goes on the desk of Rob Manfred, the new commissioner. He's been for a year now. The commissioner, Rob Manfred, he will now make his judgment. And considering the facts of the case compared to the precedent already set by Aroldis Chapman, the domestic violence tenets right now for MLB, it's kind of like the NFL. You do not have to be charged or anything like that to be able to be suspended by Rob Manfred. And so with a actual charge being thrown in, even though it was dropped, I have to imagine his punishment will be a little bit more severe than we saw with Chapman. My guess, without knowing anything at all, what Rob Manfred's thinking is 50 games. It's a nice even number that will show that it was more than Chapman, but it won't be a precedent where he's going to set like 100 games for a dropped charge or something along those lines.
Well,
that is my total
exactly
guess.
That's exactly it, because you have to – this is such a double-edged sword because of Roger Goodell.
Yeah.
The NFL
– has ruined everything.
Exactly. The way the NFL has just fumbled around and effed up everything they've done related to discipline – Roger Goodell's had multiple of his, basically his cornerstone disciplinary proceedings thrown out either by arbiters or by a court.
Tom Brady and Ray Rice.
And also there was a, with Adrian Peterson,
correct.
there was a rescinding of that punishment as well. And it was sort of after the fact, but basically Roger Goodell.
You can go down the list, basically, of guys he suspended that has been turned over in a court of law.
Right. So that is where this really falls now for Rob Manfred, because on the one hand, it's because the NFL decided, nah, we're going to install this guy and he's going to be the one who makes all the decisions and whatever. And then all of the other commissioners in sports thought, well, I got to wield that same power. I have to carry my cudgel as it pertains to these problems. Okay. All right. If you're the boss, you're the guy who wants to levy the punishment, that's fine. But on the other hand, then you can't screw it up. And you sure as hell, if you're Rob Manfred right now, you cannot set a precedent that is going to be too stiff or too lenient. You already got on one side with Aroldis Chapman 30 games. It seems
which
like
I think was
fair.
I mean, considering the situation.
Like
I mean, that's. Yeah.
But you can't go then 100 games or something like that for Jose Reyes, who was charged but not taken to trial, not convicted of a crime. Because then what happens for the next guy who is charged and does go to trial, or the next guy who is convicted of a crime, or the next guy who pleads guilty to a crime? You can't set a precedent that then you don't have the ability to carry forward to the next logical level. So right. I would not want to be the one making those decisions. I don't even know
Absolutely
how you begin
not.
To determine that.
Yeah, it's a bad situation, but where does it put the Rockies when Jose Reyes would be set to come back? Because, segue, they have already installed Trevor Story as their opening day shortstop with the hopes that he will at least carry that torch for at least the next few years.
I'm going to make a bold proclamation. We've seen the last of Jose Reyes in a Rockies uniform. And
that'd be nice.
I don't think the Rockies are going to care. This is an organization that once took it all the way across the goal line on having USA Today write a front page feature story about how they built a team around Christians. You cannot have that same organization then decide, whatever, we'll let Jose Reyes back in the field.
It's the same people in power. I mean, it's the same people who were in power when they wrote that story, when they wanted to bring that to the forefront of the national media. Same people that there are now. Still the Monforts.
Yeah, if you're the Rockies, I think you send the message that, thanks, but no thanks, Jose Reyes. We'll eat the salary. It was already a disastrous deal for the Rockies to take that on. The thing that I am dumbest about in the sport of baseball is the financial side. I don't know how that works. Maybe the Rockies try to figure out some sort of buyout for Jose Reyes.
Yeah.
He is owed a ton of money.
He is owed like $1 trillion.
Through 2018. But the Rockies are not paying all of that money. I believe the Blue Jays are picking up some of that money.
Yeah.
But I think beyond that, I think you just figure out a way to get out of the contract somehow. I don't know if there's a buyout thing that you can put together. I don't know how that works.
I think it would set a good precedent, too, and set a good example for the rest of the league, saying that, hey, if you do stupid stuff like this, we're not going to take it. And so, some teams will go back and sign him, and that's fine and whatever. But I think it would send a message. If that's the message they want to send, then if they want to eat that money and say that we're taking a stand here on a political stance, then fine. And that's their prerogative. They can do that. It's their money. And they can tell the rest of the league that this stuff's not going to fly. I mean, in Denver or wherever else.
Now, that being said, if they are on the hook for $66 million over the next 3 years, they're probably not just going to release.
Probably not going to eat that contract.
Figure out something else to do. But,
So let's segue into the other news involving Rocky shortstops, which was, as I already mentioned, Trevor Story being installed as the opening day starting shortstop this year. And we talked to this pretty much at length last week, so we're not going to dive into the whole rigmarole again. But there's been a loud contingent of a Rockies Twitter who has said this is a dumb idea. It's a mistake. You're losing his arbitration years. You're for a month of crappy baseball where you're not going to contend, you're losing an entire year of control. So if you just the first episode you're listening to, we talked about this last week, here's what we thought. There's it's basically twofold. One, they don't consider Trevor Story as one of these franchise changing can't miss prospects, and so they don't necessarily need to be as coddled with him as they would with another prospect like David Dahl or like John Gray was, or even Brendan Rodgers in a couple of years, which will segue me into my next point, which was the presence of Brendan Rodgers, the number 3 overall pick last year, only 18, 19 years old this year. He'll be starting his trip up the minor league ladder. And by the time, in my opinion, the Rockies believe that by the time they would have to pay Trevor Story real money, if he is still the starting shortstop in 3 or 4 years or whatever, they would expect Brendan Rodgers to be ready to take that torch from Trevor Story and become himself the Rockies starting shortstop. So I think that's why they're going to take this chance here, because there's also a loud contingent of people online who are saying this is a great move. Trevor Story has been the story of the camp, no pun intended. He won the Abby Greer Spring Training Award for best player in Rockies camp this year. So they're rewarding a guy who came in without a job, who performed unbelievably this spring, and they're giving him a chance to be opening day shortstop, which in a lot of people's minds, maybe people aren't necessarily stats oriented or anything along those lines, just fans of the Rockies. They see a guy playing well who has not proved himself in the big leagues yet, but he was really hungry, wants a job. He came in, kicked ass, and now he's getting rewarded for his efforts. And I think that's the big part of it as well. So that's where we stood on that. I think our opinions really changed in a week. I think it's been I think it's a good move. I honestly do. I think it's the right move to make, and I think we're going to go and see what Trevor Story can do against big league pitching for the next year or more.
Hey, let me let some people in on a little secret here. The service time thing, if the Rockies send Trevor Story down at any point this year for 2 to 3 weeks, then they've covered the service time issue. It's not like he has to stay down at the beginning of the season. He can go down at any time this season for 2 to 3 weeks, and you once again lock up that extra year of team control. So, no, I don't buy that argument. Yeah, I think it's exactly what we said last week. By the time the Rockies feel like they're going to have a franchise-changing talent ready to go at the major league level, that's Brendan Rodgers. That's a few years out. And even if it's not, if Trevor Story has proven himself by that point, then the Rockies will probably pony up, because you know what else? You know who else they ponied up to sign? Troy Tulowitzki.
And yeah, yeah.
So they
Nolan Arenado,
money,
maybe.
Yeah. Nolan Arenado, maybe at some point they have the money to sign those deals when they want to sign them. If Trevor Story looks like he's a franchise cornerstone, I don't think they're going to shy away from doing that. Yeah, they might have to do it a year earlier than what you would like, but again, if they send him down for a certain span of time at any point this year, and Jeff Breidich actually alluded to that in an interview where he had talked about this with, I think, with Thomas Harding, where he said at some point this year, that doesn't mean just because Trevor's going to be up on opening day, it doesn't mean he's going to be up all season. So we can cover the service time issue if he is sent back down at some point. So,
and the thing is, we have seen Trevor's story go to each level, struggle initially, get sent back down or repeat the level, as it were, in the minor leagues, and then come back and just destroy, just set things on fire like General Sherman. So if he goes, comes up and struggles. Yeah, sorry. So you're just, it's on the brain now. So if he comes up and has a rough April, maybe rough first 6 weeks, they can send it back down to Albuquerque, get his service time back on track, and then he comes back and he knows the level good, and he knows the talent, knows what he has to bring day in and day out physically, mentally, and then he comes back and he's your starting shortstop again. Well, there you go. Then you got your service time issues out of the way, even if it is in May to June, you know, and that's the difference. Trevor Story, he has appeared ready, and that's to say the least. This spring, he ended up, or at least to this point, it is March 30th, Wednesday, 18 games, hitting .354 with 6 home runs, only 10 strikeouts and 48 at bats, which, oh, that's a lot. Well, he has 6 walks to go along with it. So the OPS sitting at a nice 1280, the OBP at .426. He has 11 extra base hits as well. He has scored 17 runs. Doesn't mean anything in spring training, but still, it's a very, very large number. So
still
he has
fun
done
with numbers. Yeah.
Yeah, fun with numbers. He has done everything the Rockies have asked of him and more. I'm sure they were shocked by the spring he put on. They wanted him to come in and compete. They were probably ready to go with Adames or even like Daniel Descalzo. I'm sure they're ready to go with any other guy next to Trevor Story. But Trevor Story came in and forced their hand. And that's the whole point of setting up an open competition like Walt Weiss did once the whole Jose Reyes thing blew up and it became, he got sent on paid leave. And so he said, well, open competition. You got a couple of veterans, you got a couple of young guys. Let's see where we end up in a month. And here we are. Trevor Story, next to Nolan Arenado, has been the best player in Rockies camp, but Nolan Arenado has been the best player in all of spring training this spring. So that's nothing to sneeze at for Trevor Story. He earned it. It's his job. Let him run with it.
I'm excited to see what Trevor Story can do to get this season started, because last year in August, got a chance to talk to him in Albuquerque, and it seemed like he said in the interview, you know, I'm not really thinking about it. I know that it could be close, but I'm just trying to stay focused on my business here. But I could tell how much he really wanted to be at Coors Field at the end of last season, to finally make it to the big leagues, get that call up, finally be told by Glenn Allen Hill, all right, you're making the move. And it didn't happen. So from my vantage point, that's what I think all this offseason and this spring is from for Trevor Story. And if that's the case, it's a good job by the Rockies to keep him down toward the end of the year and feed him that motivation coming into 2016. Because you're right, he forced the issue. The Rockies, I think, would have rather not had to deal with the whole who's going to start in place of Jose Reyes thing, because of what a nightmare that's been, just because of the drama that situation inherently carries. But to have a guy who you thought when you drafted him in the first round a few years ago was going to be this guy by this point in his career, this is like best case scenario for Trevor Story and for the Rockies by connection. So this is, I'm excited to see how this goes from the start of the season on. I will say that the Orioles, if I'm led to believe correctly by MLB 16, the show, the Orioles would be happy to trade Kevin Gausman for Jose Reyes and one pitching prospect. So I'm just going to put that out there. Yeah. We know that some people in the organization listen to the podcast. We've heard that. If you stop by Jeff Breidich's office, I've done a couple interviews with Jeff in the past for MILB. Drop my name, say I did this on the show. And I would imagine he'll take that into heavy consideration because Kevin Gausman goes out 9 innings, complete game, shutout 3 hits, struck out 12. I'm just saying it worked out very, very well on the show for me last night. And that's generally the way things go in real life. So
that's literally the way things go in real life. Yeah,
I would say it's yeah, like it's a near certainty.
Yeah,
I don't know who the prospect was.
Yeah,
I just threw
it's all good.
In there.
So, keep in mind, Trevor Story is 23 yeah. years old. He won't turn 24 right. until November. And
this
you
is
know,
the
he,
exact the, developmental track. If you could have talked to the Rockies on the day they took Trevor Story and said, when do you envision him in the big leagues? They probably would have said, I don't know, 2015, best case scenario, probably more likely 2016.
Yeah, I mean, he spent 2011 in Casper. We still the last Casper ghost coming around. We got a Casper ghost going to be starting the league, the season
Trevor
in the big
Story,
leagues.
I asked him last year when I was down there what his favorite minor league team was because his stops in his career have been amazing.
Casper, Asheville, Modesto twice, Tri-City,
yeah.
Tulsa, New Britain, Albuquerque.
Ghost, tourist, nut. He got to be a driller and a rock
yeah.
cat.
Yeah, he did.
And then an isotope. Yeah, he's had a hell of a good minor league logo and name tour.
Yeah, that. Yeah, his hat collection is probably better than yours.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty awesome. But
good
yeah,
for
I mean,
Trevor Story. Good
yeah,
for him.
I'm very excited for Trevor Story. It should be really fun to watch him finally get this look. I think the Rockies, they've needed a story to go like that. And I don't. I am not going to be pun guy with Trevor Story's last name. It drives me insane. But
the Trevor
needed,
ending story.
They've needed somebody to develop the exact way that you lay out for them. You know what I mean? And Trevor Story,
yeah.
you know, his ETA, if you could have pinpointed it when the Rockies took him in 2011, I think you would have said, yeah, 2015, 2016.
5 years.
And it's worked out pretty perfectly.
It's a 5-year plan for the most part.
He's
like,
a,
that's almost always what it is.
Plan.
He's 23.
Trevor Story, by the way, when he was taken in the 2011 draft, was listed by Baseball America out of that draft class for the Rockies as the best pure hitter, the fastest runner, the best defensive player, the best pro debut, which is in the Pioneer League in 2011, the best athlete of that season's draft class, and I think that was it. So, you know, pretty good track record there.
Now, I want to point out in 537 minor league games, he has 96 steals. And an average of 29 a year, he has 13 caught stealings. He's only been caught 13 times
it's a very
in
good
537 games. He picks his spots. He has 20 steals in 4 separate seasons in the minor leagues. Basically, average 29 stolen bases, only 4 caught stealings a year per 162 games in the minor leagues. That's pretty. Like that's just another element to his game that
it's
we haven't had
good.
As a shortstop in a while.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Pretty. And the other guy, we pretty much have the rest of the starting nine locked in for the Rockies in terms of the actual batting order.
Yep.
One guy who
Charlie
made
Blackman
the
hit two homers in my opener.
Yes, he
hit
did.
Hit one off of Granke. Hit another one later
he
on.
He also hit a few in real life, too. He hit 4 this spring. You know what I like about Chuck Spring? 10 walks, 9 strikeouts.
Yeah, that's sexy. I can be
like
with
Chuck.
That.
You know, a few years back, we started this podcast. We were saying, oh, Blackman's whatever. Like, he had that hot start in 2014. Where
6-6
then he just
on opening day.
Yeah. And then he died in the second half. And like, oh, well, Chuck's just maybe he's just a fluke. He's a Coors guy. Chuck improved his game in every possible way last year, stole 40 bases. And now here he is and had a great spring, tweaking himself again. And he's becoming a very, very valuable player.
Charlie Blackman, and we said this earlier, I
we'll
think
back
the end of last season.
Yeah,
but like we definitely kind of undeservedly, I think, got annoyed with just the shtick around Charlie Blackman. And
yeah,
not,
I think
not
that's
necessarily
kind of
because of him, but I think just because like,
yeah.
again, like, oh, look, the Denver news media doesn't know what to cover about the Rockies. They're just going to do another story about wacky Charlie Blackmon. Like, it just got kind of annoying. But you're right. Like, dude got better at everything he did last year. Struck out a lot, but he was pretty damn good last season compared. Anyway, continue.
So, I mean, we pretty much know what's locked in. We got Hundley at catcher, the platoon of Paulson and Reynolds at first, DJ at second, Trevor at third, Nolan at third base, or short, then Nolan at third, and then outfield of Parra, Blackmon, Cargo. That's pretty much locked in. But a really, really cool story for the Rockies about a Rule 5 pick from the Cleveland Indians who, like Trevor's story, came in without a job, albeit as a Rule 5 pick, without anything at all. And Tony Wolters, he was a prospect of the Indian system for a few years. He came into camp, and in 22 games, he hit 400, hit a home run, knocked in five, six doubles, and he earned the backup catcher spot over guys like Dustin Garneau and Tommy Murphy, and he's going to make his first opening day roster in his career, and that is pretty damn cool for a guy like Tony Wolters.
You know what was really cool? On the day the Rockies made that decision, seeing the way that Cleveland Indians organization members were thrilled for Tony Wolters. That's how you know you got a good guy on your hands.
Absolutely.
When everybody from his last system can't be happier for him that he's finally getting his first big league job. That was really, really cool to see.
And he's only 23 as well. He turns 24 in June. Last year in 65 games with Akron for Cleveland in AA. He spent the last 2 years at Akron. He only hit .209 with a .570 OPS. But back in 2012, he was considered one of their better prospects. 2012, 2013, the Carolina League with the Indians. He had eight home runs that year at .260, .724 OPS for the Carolina Mudcats back in 2012. As a catcher, can play a couple of positions. He was considered a guy the Indians might be looking at as a utility guy going forward who can actually catch. But he also had still 19 bases in a season twice. So he's got that up his sleeve as well. So I think just seeing the fact that a guy like that can come into camp with a brand new team and impress the way he did to make the roster out of opening day, especially when you had guys like Tommy Murphy, who's expected to take that next step this year and maybe even wrestle the starting job away from Nick Hundley. Now, it would have had to do a lot, I think, because I think they wanted to go with Nick Hundley for many reasons. It's a last year of his contract. He's a veteran guy who wants to be with the staff. And they sent Tommy Murphy down because they want him to get a bunch of at-bats consistently at Albuquerque. And I understand that's how a roster is built. But just the fact that he came in and did his job the way that he did, that's exactly what you're looking for. You always have you're going to camp. You probably have your 25-man roster. You know 23 guys who are going to be there. And it's those final two spots where you maybe have no idea. And you're looking for stories like Tony Wolters, and the Rockies had one fall into their laps with this pick. But kudos to them on their scouting to get a guy like him in there, bring him into camp, see what he could do. They know his scouting report, and he worked out for them. And that's a wonderful, wonderful story the Rockies had this past March in Scottsdale.
Here is the main goal, I think, of the whole catching situation. Tommy Murphy's still your guy. At least as of right now, until Dom Nunez gets to the big leagues, is what it seems like. The
right.
Rockies love
yeah.
Dom Nunez. But Tommy Murphy's your guy. And I think what the Rockies really want, and we won't see final minor league rosters announced until probably early next week, maybe the end of this week, but probably early next week. Like you said, the Rockies want Tommy Murphy to get regular bats. I think what the Rockies also want is I think they want him to work on a regular basis with the guys that they hope he's going to be catching in the big leagues 2017 and beyond.
Jeff Hoffman.
Whether that's Jeff Hoffman, whether it's Kyle Freeland, whoever it is, I think that's part of this too, is you can get to work with those guys now because those relationships carry over in a big, big way once you make it to the big leagues. So I think that's part of this too for the Rockies and for Tommy Murphy. But again, it's so cool for Tony Wolters. And yeah, Tony Wolters is not going to be Johnny Bench, but he's going to play once out of every four, once out of every 5 days.
Yeah, maybe twice
a
week.
Great story right now.
Yeah, and also Tommy Murphy came into camp, went 2-for-21, but both hits were home runs. So that power's still there for Tommy Murphy. And he'll have plenty of time to become the Rockies' starting catcher.
Another story from the Colorado Rockies that is not a good one. Jason Mott out for an undetermined amount of time with a shoulder strain. That's not a good thing. Mott was he's actually listed on the Rockies depth chart on the website, which doesn't necessarily mean anything, but he's actually listed there as the team's closer. So the Rockies right now, I would imagine, turn to Jake McGee in that role. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's shocking that a 33-year-old relief pitcher who has had arm problems and has been on the DL each of the last 3 years would have arm problems coming into camp.
And go on the DL?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So
away from me with your sorcery and logic.
Yeah. With Jason Mott out of the equation, you have to imagine that Jake McGee will get the best look, considering he was traded for Corey Dickerson. He's got a pretty solid pedigree coming over from Tampa Bay. This spring, Jake McGee, he was okay. Just okay. No, he was fine. He only threw six games. He gave up two runs in six innings. Struck out six, only walked one. So I imagine, considering his pedigree, he will have the first crack at it. I mean, last year in 39 games, he was 6 of 10 in save opportunities. 2 years ago, he was 19 of 23 for Tampa Bay. But he's had an ERA over the last 2 years of a little over two. So he is one of the more projectable arms the Rockies have in there. Chad Qualls may get some looks as well. He has saved games in the past. He went 19 of 25 for Houston 2 years ago, but he is also 1,004 years old.
Yeah.
I think this can lead in to our breakout players.
Oh, okay.
I will lead to it this way.
Okay.
Every year, Tyler and I have gone through who we think will be the breakout players to make their mark in the big leagues that maybe haven't had a chance to do so this year or that year. In 2014, we knocked it out of the park. We picked Tyler Matzek and Corey Dickerson. And in 2014, both of those guys.
Yeah. Before you go, Tyler Matzek sucks. Yeah. Tyler Matzek was a stud at the end of 2014 when he came up.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
He had an ERA of 4.05, struck out 91 and 117 and two-thirds innings through a complete game. Tyler Matzek was great that year.
Before
the issues cropped up again for him this spring. Last year, a little bit hit or miss. Tyler went with Kyle Freeland, which unbelievable, like just an awful, awful pick. I can't believe anybody even picked something so stupid.
Don't ever let anybody say to you,
"Yeah,
hey, make a bold prediction." Who doesn't know how bold prediction?
Doesn't know what the word "bold" or prediction means. You also picked Tommy Murphy as your hitter last year.
Kyle Freeland. Kyle Freeland did not have he didn't make his major league debut. That was my bold prediction at a Rockies bloggers panel event. Never again will I make a bold prediction. But by the way, Kyle Freeland came back pretty damn strong at the end of the season, especially in the Arizona Fall League. So I don't necessarily agree with the assessment that he was a real lost cause. Last year, in total, only made a handful of minor league appearances combined between Grand Junction and Modesto. In total, 3-2 record, 4.05 ERA, whatever. But with Salt River in the Arizona Fall League, 6 starts, ERA of 2.84, he went 4-1. And of the 8 runs that he allowed last year in the AFL, 6 of them came in his first appearance. So his following 5, he only gave up 2 total runs. And that was over 24 2/3 innings. So Kyle Freeland, I'm still very high on. Whatever, continue.
Your pitcher was Tommy Murphy, who had never been above AA at that point, made his big league debut last year. I'll call that a win. My picks were Kyle Parker. Kyle Parker, which he made his big league debut last year, and that's it. We'll leave it at that for right now.
He debuted
in 2014.
Debuted in 2014.
Yeah,
but last year got, you know, a look.
And he's still with the team, so he'll be in AAA.
Bobby DeMuro had a very good story on Kyle,
he did,
by the way.
Yeah. He's been killing it this spring, by the way. Bobby has. Not necessarily Kyle Parker. Bobby has, definitely. Yeah, but I picked Chad Bettis as my breakout pitcher last year.
Yeah.
And Chad Bettis made 20 starts, went 8-6, 4.23 ERA, 98 punch-outs in 115 innings. I think that pretty much counts as a breakthrough. He's starting the season right now as the number two pitcher in the Rockies rotation, so I think I can call that one, especially when he was coming off his year in 2014 where he had a 9.12 ERA in 21 games. To call that one, I'm considering that a win.
Very good Chettis.
Yes, he was very good Chettis last year for the most part. So, to this season. We're going to do a little bit differently this year. So we're going to go with a hitter and a pitcher each who we think will make an impact at the big league level this season. And then we'll go one farther and a prospect, a hitter and a pitcher who will open eyes this year, let's just say. So considering I was talking about guys who may be in the mix for a closer job for the Rockies down the road, whether it be sooner than later, my breakout pitcher to make his mark with the big league roster this season for the Rockies is Miguel Castro. Miguel Castro, 6'5", 190-pound, 21-year-old right-hander.
By the way, can we just point out,
yes,
190 pounds, pretty generous,
maybe,
Miguel Castro. Yeah. I think he weighs maybe 90 pounds.
Yeah, he might weigh 90.
6'5", 90 pounds. String bean.
Came over in the Troy Tulowitzki trade last season. He averaged 96 miles an hour on his fastball with Toronto last year. He's a very, very hard thrower, somewhat unpolished. He began the year actually in Toronto last season after never appearing above high A ball. He impressed that much in camp last year. Came up and predictably struggled. He was a 20-year-old kid. He actually was 4 of 6 in save opportunities for the Blue Jays early on in the season, put up a 4.38 ERA in 13 games, struck out 12 in 12 and a third innings. Those are the good things. Made 5 appearances with the Rockies last year. Did not go so well. Gave up 6 runs in 5 and a third. Did strike out 6 batters, but that unsightly 10.13 ERA. Now, in the minor leagues, Miguel Castro has been a much different player, different pitcher. Obviously still very, very projectable, but a career minor league ERA of 2.54, 224 Ks in 209 and a third innings. And this spring, he has been very impressive coming out of camp. Eight games, 8 innings, 8 strikeouts, no walks. So that's what you wanted to see. He had a 3.38 earned run average, gave up 3 runs in those 8 innings. But I think he can be a guy with his frame, with his projectability, and with the fact that he was part of that big deal that a lot of fans want to see some return from it when that Troy Tulowitzki trade. I think Miguel Castro can make a case for being on the big league club coming out of camp. We haven't sure, I'm not sure who the final couple of spots are going to be in the bullpen now that the Mott injury has come through. But I think he, if it's not right away, I think we're going to see a lot of Miguel Castro this year. And I think he is part of that new wave of fastball heavy, strikeout inducing pitchers that Jeff Breidich has loved so much in the last couple of years and bringing over to the Rockies organization. And I think he's going to be given a lot of opportunities to show what he can do this season in Denver.
I like it. Castro, he was the first sign, I think, really of, okay, now I see what Jeff Breidich is doing.
Right.
Jeff Hoffman, you looked at Jeff Hoffman and you thought, okay, very highly regarded prospect. He's the type of guy you want to get back in a deal, like what they gave up in the Troy Tulowitzki trade. But when Castro came along with him, and then you saw Jesus Tinoco, then it all started to make sense. Okay, they're going with fastball guys.
Even last year, to Jairo Diaz, and Diaz will miss the year this year with Tommy John surgery. But even that with Josh Rutledge for Jairo Diaz trade before last season, that was maybe the first precursor to all these other trades that we have seen from Jeff Breidich in the last year or so.
Yeah, and I really, really like Miguel Castro a lot. And I'm going to go with the other guy in that deal. I'm going to take Jeff Hoffman. I will say I don't know if the Rockies are going to be ready to bring up Jeff Hoffman at the end of 2016 if they're not in contention because, again, there will be service time. There will be Super 2 considerations, all that stuff. But if this is a world where you don't have to worry about that, I think Jeff Hoffman will be ready for the major leagues by the middle to the latter stages of the summer in 2016. I think Kyle Freeland will be there on the doorstep as well, as long as he stays healthy. But Jeff Hoffman, I got a chance to talk to him when I was down in Scottsdale. And Hoffman, we interviewed on the Minor League Baseball podcast right after his professional debut. I talked about this a little bit last week, but right after his pro debut with Dunedin back in June, I think it was June, maybe May of 2015. And Hoffman just seemed like a guy who was so ready. He was so ready to climb quickly in an organization, and it was the Blue Jays organization at the time. And what he told me, which I found very interesting, was when he got to the Rockies, He felt like everything slowed down. He said, with the Blue Jays, I felt really pressured. I felt like they needed me right away. Like, I had to be in the big leagues as quickly as I could get to the big leagues.
He was a highly projectable number one overall potential prospect who then blew out his arm, had Tommy John surgery, fell to, what, seven, I believe?
So, I think he was ninth overall. And yeah. Kyle Freeland was eighth or vice versa.
Yeah.
Whichever one went where. But the difference was Hoffman... Freeland was eighth, by the way, and Hoffman was ninth. Hoffman, they thought, could be, kind of like a Garrett Cole, that sort of thing, where you bring him up, he injects some life at the end of a season. Didn't the Pirates do that with Garrett Cole? Or am I thinking of, is this a different case study I'm thinking of?
Oh, they did it with Garrett Cole, yeah.
So that was, that's kind of an in vogue thing in the last few years of Major League Baseball. You can get these guys. Brandon Finnegan is a great example. Brandon Finnegan went from being a first-round pick by the Royals, who had pitched in the College World Series in 2014, to then pitching in the Major League World Series in 2015 because the Royals needed bullpen arms. They needed power guys down the stretch. So Brandon Finnegan's another good example. So Jeff Hoffman said, I felt like that's what the Blue Jays really needed from me. They really needed me to get to the Major League level quickly. And when I got over here, the Rockies said, take your time. We know how good you're going to be. You don't need to be there right now. Get healthy, feel good, finish out the season strong. Next season, come back, get to work, and we're going to take this thing all through together. That seemed like something he really, really liked about the Rockies organization, was that they weren't putting that on him. All of this stuff is on you now, kid. Like, you were the first round pick and you really got to contribute to this. Start pulling your weight around here. The Rockies, I think, kind of came to him with the approach of, dude, we know who you are. We know you're going to be a stud. Let's just make sure that it gets there healthy. That
do it on your terms.
Arm feels good. Yeah. Exactly. Do it on your terms. So Jeff Hoffman, to me, is a guy who needs very little refinement. What we've seen from him in Major League camp has been glimpses of how good he can be at the Major League level, and also glimpses of, yeah, his kid still needs to learn a bit. And that's the entire point of AAA. The entire point of AAA is going and facing guys who have Major League style approaches. Are they all Major League talents? No, they're not. But they all approach you with a veteran's eye, the way that you will see hitters approach you at AAA. In his very first Major League camp appearance, Jeff Hoffman, over two innings against the Reds on March 6th, threw two scoreless, one hit, no walks, two strikeouts, looked brilliant. 11 days later, got 2 2/3 against the Angels, 8 hits, 4 runs, all earned. He walked two, he only struck out one. So you got to go to AAA, you got to get those polishing moments, and then I think he's more than likely going to be ready to go.
Yeah, I made 20 starts last year.
23 years old.
Yes. Everybody's 23 years old, I feel like.
Basically. Except for me and you.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And Cam.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I'll be 30 in a month and a half.
Welcome to the club.
I know. Yeah, I mean, so 20 starts last year, 11 with Dunedin in a high A ball, 2 with New Hampshire, and then 7 with New Britain, 3.03 ERA in 104 innings, struck out 75 batters. He's now going to be 2 years removed from Tommy John, I believe now. So this is the year where he can really let loose, let it all go, and be the guy who was considered to be the number one overall pick back from East Carolina.
Hitters.
All righty. Hitters that I'm looking forward to making a big splash, I will not bury the lead. We've talked about him a lot. Trevor Story is the breakout player. I'm not here to trick you guys. That's not the point. Trevor Story could be a breakout hitter in all of MLB this year, considering what he has done so far with the Rockies, both in the minor league system and now this spring. He's got to be considered one of those candidates that on a lot of watch lists. And I'm in 6 fantasy leagues, and every single one has taken Trevor Story within the first 15 rounds because everybody is so intrigued with what he can do in Coors Field. And we mentioned this in the podcast last week, but it doesn't take a lot for Trevor Story to become one of the top 10 offensive shortstops in baseball. There were only two shortstops last year with OPSs over 800, and they were 21 years old and 20 years old in Francisco Lindor and Carlos Correa, respectively. So doesn't need for him to do a lot in order to become one of the better offensive shortstops in baseball. And his defense has shown in the minor leagues from the plays that we have seen and in camp this spring, his defense is big league ready as well. It's not as polished as somebody like Troy Tulowitzki's was when he first got up, but Trevor Story is absolutely no slouch with the glove either. As you mentioned before, he can steal some bases as well. He can be an all-around player for the Rockies as long as the lights aren't too bright for him initially when he gets called up, which really is my biggest worry with Trevor Story. But
sunglasses.
And that's, well, no, actually the light is actually brighter. Like it's sunnier in all these places when you get up there.
Well, you're closer to the sun in Colorado.
That's also true. That's why. So if that is the if that's the biggest thing with Trevor Story, he has to make go back and get some seasoning. That's fine. But he is definitely my breakout candidate this year. There's no sense in shying away from the obvious pick.
Okay. I like it. My pick is going to be the other obvious pick. And again, comes with the same caveats, service time, Super 2, whatever. David Dahl. I think this is the year David Dahl is finally ready. Last season, goes through everything with the spleen, comes back, is somehow better sans spleen than he was with a spleen, which didn't make any sense. That dude is ready to go. And he is, again, he at the risk of being Denny Green, he is who we thought he was. David Dahl's the whole package. And I think once he gets to Albuquerque, once he gets into everyday regular looks against AAA pitching, I don't think it's going to take him long to get acclimated to seeing the way that guys approach you, you know, kind of the opposite of Jeff Hoffman, seeing the way a major league mindset will be, that is the next and maybe the final step for David Dahl is seeing that really kind of blossom, being able to take those approaches and show that you have the ability to succeed against advanced level pitching. You can succeed against guys with good stuff. He's already done that in Double A. Can you do it now against guys who are going to pitch you the way major leaguers are going to pitch you? And I think it's it. I think David Dahl's, I think he's on the road.
And he turns 22 in 2 days. So April 1st, he turns 22.
Good Lord.
So my goodness. Keep that in mind as well. But yes, you're absolutely right. He is the whole package, and he'll be healthy this year. Well, at least from the spleen. So he's always had, or at least most years, he's had injuries. But I think this is the year. I think you're absolutely right. So prospect wise,
yes,
guys who, I mean, I can go with the obvious one here, Raimel Tapia. I mean, Tapia is our love, our muse, and
he's so dreamy.
He really is. And by the way, Raimel Tapia, but it is Raimel. We have decided Raimel Tapia. Raimel Tapia put up a phenomenal camp with the Rockies this spring. He's probably going to start in Double A. I imagine he'll make it up to Triple A this season. But this spring, 18 games and 36 at bats, he hit 389. 405 OBP and 933 OPS. It's had four extra base hits, three doubles and a triple, drove in four, stole a base.
He also followed me on Twitter the other day, which I could not have been more excited.
Did you play it cool?
Yeah, like I didn't acknowledge it right away. And by the way, I also wrote an entire Rockies prospect primer for MILB.com and a 2,000-word blog entry, and on neither one of those does Tapia's name come up.
So on purpose or
the first time ever, because I even sat down and I said to Zach Wilson when I did an interview with him at Rockies camp, Rockies player development director, I said, I'm not going to ask you about Tapia because I just ask you the same questions every time we have conversations about him. Because it's just like, okay, Raimel Tapia is awesome. How does he keep being awesome? So
yeah,
I picked different guys to talk about this year.
And he's just 22 as well.
Yeah.
Also, career, by the way, 806 OPS in the minors, career 314 average in the minors.
We didn't get a chance to talk about this, but that story on Vice Sports about him, go find that story. We were going to talk about that last week.
Oh, it's
week
a phenomenal
get
story.
A chance to, but that story's phenomenal. Go find that story. It's awesome. Anyway, I cut you off, as I am wont to do, as they say.
You are. Raimel Tapia will not make his major league debut this season. I will go on record saying that right now, but I think he'll start in Double A. I think the way they have taken him every single year is put him up a level every year. But I think this is the year that if his first half goes really well with the Yard Goats, that they will strongly consider bringing him up in the second to Albuquerque just to see how he responds, because he really has never been taken up to another level during in the middle of a season. He played 66 games with Grand Junction in 2013, no other team. 122 games with Asheville in 2014, no other team. 131 Modesto last year, no other team. It has been incremental up each rung of the ladder. This is the year I believe the Rockies will start taking more chances with Tapia to see how he responds because of the camp that he just put in, even if it wasn't necessarily always against big league pitching. Some of those at-bats were, and some of those at-bats, I'm sure he very, very much impressed the Rockies brass. So this is the year where Raimel Tapia, I believe, will be given more of free reign and given more of a chance to get up in the higher levels of the minor league system. I believe a 2017 MLB debut is going to be the case for Raimel Tapia.
Man, in the offing, you believe. You believe a 2017 MLB debut is in the offing.
I believe so.
For Tapia. Okay. I like it. I'm going to go way off the radar with my minor league prospect.
Yeah, I'm just saying like the guys that are obvious who are really awesome and we love. We talk about all the time and whatever. Like, I'm not trying to trick people here.
No, definitely. I'm going to go way off the radar with one. With one on the pitcher's mound, I'm going to take Ryan Castellani. A lot of people forget about Ryan Castellani. People forget that. Castellani, the Rockies took in the second round back out of a high school in the Phoenix area in 2014. He was signed by Chris Forbes. We've talked about Chris Forbes and talked to Chris Forbes on the podcast. One of the most amazing stories in baseball, a guy who beat cancer and is the nicest dude you could ever meet. Go look up Chris Forbes' story. He's amazing. But he signed Ryan Castellani, scouted him out of high school in Phoenix. Castellani last year at 19 years old made 27 starts for Asheville in the South Atlantic League, and the numbers are pretty good. 2-7 record of 4.45 ERA, struck out 94, walked 29 in 113 innings, strikeouts per nine 7.5. that jumped almost a strikeout and a half from his debut season with Tri-City in 2014. But nobody is talking about Castellani. They signed him away from Arizona State. He was committed to go there for $1.1 million. That was his bonus. So he signs, comes in 19, goes to the Sally League and pitches wire to wire and puts up pretty good numbers in a pretty offensively friendly ballpark in Asheville. I like Ryan Castellani. I'm in on him.
Absolutely. I like him. Yeah, why would you not be?
Give it an eye. Give it an eye for the old 2016 season. And then as far as position players go, I fell in love with Jensen Park, who is probably not a big leaguer.
I live near Jensen Park.
Do you?
No, that's not a thing. I just wanted to say it. It was a setup.
It wouldn't be the same one either. Even
no,
if
it
was
not
an actual, because this is a person and you're talking about like an open space in the city.
Oh, right.
God. That's explained everything to you. But Jensen Park was a 32nd round selection last year by the Rockies out of the University of Northern Colorado. He was a former Western Athletic Conference, you know that as the WAC, Player of the Year. That was back in 2014 when he batted .428 and led UNC in hits, doubles, triples, and tied for the team lead in home runs. But last year, Jensen Park really, really acquitted himself very well in his debut season. Combined between rookie level Grand Junction and Class A short season Boise, 49 games, a slash line of 314, 335, 464. It's a 799 OPS. He did struggle a little bit after jumping up to Boise at the end of the season, but you know, that happens. He had 19 appearances there, slash 268, 289, 352. But when you were at the end of a college season, going on through the end of a professional season, you're so beat to hell by
and
September.
Going through to two separate levels, too, of your professional career as well when you're your first year. That's tough.
So, that's my guy. I like Jensen Park. I think Asheville for him this year. And, you know, not the youngest dude because he was a senior coming out of school. So, he's 23, turned 23 on December 10th. But I like Jensen Park. I feel like keep an eye on him. He's worth keeping an eye on.
I think so, too. And to keep with my theme of being obvious about everything, Antonio Sensatella, keep an eye on that guy as well. Antonio Sensatella is a guy that everybody for the Rockies organization needs to know right now. Last year in the Cal League of all leagues, put up a 2.51 ERA. That's the second best ERA in the Cal League for a qualified starter in the last 30 years. So 143 punchouts. In 154 innings, he only walked 33 batters. That is a over 4-1 strikeout to walk ratio. He is a very polished guy, and he just turned 21 back on January 21st. Made a few appearances in Rockies camp this year as well, three to be exact. Only gave up two runs in 10 innings, did strike out six as well. And we always knew when Senzatella was pitching, whether it was in a big league game or whether it was on a minor league game in a side field or whatever, because we always had beat writers, whether it's Thomas Harding or Nick Roque or Patrick Saunders, they would always tweet about how guys would walk away from a bat against Antonio Senzatella shaking their head. And these are even big leaguers, not just minor leaguers as well. When they saw Antonio Senzatella in the game, they saw his stuff and they were just like, wow, who was that kid? He's a 21-year-old who has made 81 starts in his professional career, including 2 years, or I guess a year and a half, in the Dominican Summer League as well, but a 2.49 career ERA through all of those levels. So I think just the fact that he has gone under the radar in a lot of prospect lists. He is now he's cracked the top 10 in Baseball Prospectus. He's number 8 now on their list. I think he really opened a lot of eyes last year because nobody puts up those kind of numbers in the Cal League. He only gave up 10 home runs in a league where you sometimes average 10 home runs a game. So
yeah,
I think he put himself on the map last year, a 21-year-old out of Valencia, Venezuela. I think he's probably going to start in Double A this year.
Wait,
with the Yard Goats.
Where did you see that he's out of Valencia?
On our stats pass, my proprietary stuff for.
Oh, and it's finally on our site, dude. Okay.
This pause. What's going on?
Antonio Senzatella, his MILB.com player page and his Baseball Reference player page for his entire career have never listed his birthplace. It always either said nothing or just said Venezuela, and now it finally says his hometown. That makes me so excited. That is like extra level nerdery that I would have ever noticed that about Antonio Senzatella. But I was like, did just nobody ask him when he got drafted?
Yeah.
Like, all right. Or when he got signed, like, Antonio, where are you from? Fill this out.
Venezuela.
It was just never up on anything. And now it's there. That makes me so happy. Okay, Valencia.
So
anyway, keep an eye on him.
There's something like this, a hilarious stat that he put up in his final 8 starts in the DSL. Back in 2013, when he would have been 18 years old, 51 innings in the DSL, the year, 1.76 ERA. He struck out 46 batters. He walked 3. And then got called up to Tri-City.
Nope. That's not real. That
46-3 K to walk ratio. Obviously, the DSL is not the best competition you're ever going to find in the world, but those numbers
are
stupid.
But when you're 18, it's all even competition. You know, it's not
That's
like
true.
He was 22 and he was down there dominating.
That's a good point.
I got a chance to talk to Zach Wilson about him, and one of the things I love about Zach Wilson is when the Rockies are right, when they've hit on a pick, I love the like borderline arrogance with, and I mean this genuinely, I love the borderline arrogance with Zach Wilson and with the player development staff of like, we know what people say, but these dudes are good, and we know these dudes are good. This is what he said to me about Antonio Senzatella. He said, quote, I think he certainly doesn't get the attention that he deserves. I think some of that is 2 years ago. If you look at the numbers, he didn't have the eye-popping strikeout numbers. And then this is the money quote. People outside of the inner circle, they look at that and go, what is this guy? Internally, we knew exactly what he was. And that, if you go back and check the numbers, 2014, Zach Wilson's exactly right. In over that season, a 26-start stint with Asheville. He went 15-2 with a 3.11 ERA.
In another tough pitcher's park, by the way. McCormick Field's very, very tough for the pitchers. Very small right field porch, especially.
Right. But that season, he only struck out 89 batters and walked 36 in 144 and two-thirds. And then
11
last
home runs
year,
allowed, too.
Yeah, exactly. And then last year just blows up 143 Ks, 33 walks, and 154 innings. Antonio Senzatella, I think, from what I have heard, from what scouts that I've talked to, from what the Rockies player development staff says about him, he's so advanced that when you see something like that dip in strikeout numbers in 2014, it's not because, oh, that's Senzatella kid, he can't strike anybody out at this level. It's because he's working on different stuff. And this is another
he's
quote.
Just toying with hitters.
Right, exactly. Which, you know, you basically can do when you have the stuff that
Good.
He has.
Yeah.
But Zach Wilson talked about how, you know, he's got a slider that he's really only had for just a little bit over a year. I also talked to Walt Weiss about him, and Weiss said, quote, Very, very good fastball command, which is foundational for any pitcher. He's got that already. There's power to his fastball. There's angle to his fastball. There's command. When you put those three things together, you've got something. So the Rockies, they go out, and the splashy move is Jeff Hoffman. And the splashy draft pick is Kyle Freeland, because Kyle Freeland's the local kid. And John Gray is a sexy pick because he throws triple digits and whatever. And all the while, here's this quiet signing out of Venezuela who is as good as the rest of them, and people really don't know about him that much yet. So coming into this season, keep an eye on Antonio Senzatela. We've known about him for a while, but if you're not a prospect nerd, he's not one of the guys that you're immediately going to notice. So keep an eye on him. He'll be with Hartford to start the year. He is a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's tough to go from the South Atlantic League to the Cal League and lower your whip, lower your hits per nine, lower your walks per nine, increase your K to walk ratio, and put up your strikeouts per nine innings by 3. 5.5 to 8.4.
That is nuts.
That's hard to do for a kid who was 20 last year.
Ridiculous. So, yeah, keep an eye on that. Two other guys that I'm going to have an eye on. I mean, the obvious one, I'm really excited to see what Brendan Rodgers does. Seeing Brendan Rodgers in minor league camp, dude is cut. You can tell he put in a ton of work to build his body up, to get through the rigors of a 140-game season this year. Really excited because when you watch him, you see it. You and I have had this conversation a lot.
You see it with a capital I.
Right. Yeah. When I got into the minor leagues, and I know I've told this story on the podcast before, somebody, and I don't remember who it was, but my first season in Myrtle Beach, somebody said to me, you will see guys who have it, and you won't be able to tell what it is. You'll just know it when you see it. Those are the big leaguers. And the first guy I ever noticed that with was Jason Hayward.
Yeah.
Because Jason Hayward just looked like a man among boys, and he was 19 at the time. But he just looked like the game came so easily for him compared to everybody else. For Brendan Rodgers, he has it. And I only got to see him in an inter-squad game, but seeing the way that he takes grounders, the way he puts in his work, the way he takes BP, how he is in games – that dude's got it. So I'm excited to see what he does over the slog of a full season. But also, I'm really excited to see the way Mike Nikorak bounces back. And again, our good pal Bobby DeMuro, great story on Mike Nikorak. He's not worried about last season. The Rockies are certainly not worried about last season. But I'm excited to see the way that he bounces back. He was rated by most every publication as the top high school arm going into the draft last year. The Rockies got him in the back end of the first round. And then
it was seen as a steal. I mean, yeah, it was at the time, it was seen as a huge steal.
And, you know, the numbers were atrocious for him in rookie ball. But it's rookie ball. He's 18 years old. He's still working on stuff. And, again, similarly to Brendan Rodgers, that's a really long season. He's coming out of pitching in cold weather climates in early spring, getting into the middle of spring. Then all of a sudden your high school season's over. Then you're just working in live BP or you're throwing side sessions, bullpens, whatever. You're not getting in-game action. So for Nikorak, when he gets into a routine, when he's eating professionally with professional trainers around, when he's getting his sleep right, the way that major league style staffs now are so emphatic about sleep schedules and nutrition and whatever, he's going to be fine. Tyler Nevin's the other guy. He was a supplemental first-round pick last year. Nevin had a really good breakout season. Not a breakout season, but a really good debut season with Grand Junction last year. Really held his own very, very well. 265, 368, 386 was his slash line for Grand Junction. And again, 18 years old, competitive balance round pick last year, played in 53 games, was there day in and day out for Grand Junction. So I'm excited to see that. The thing that I'm most excited to see with Tyler Nevin is probably not going to come this year or next year, or maybe even the year after. But yeah, is Phil Nevin. I'm really excited to see the way that his power develops, because he is a big kid already, but he's 18. He's not hitting for a ton of power. That's going to come. And when it comes, I think he's going to be a really scary power type of prospect down the road. So, you know, he's a third baseman. Maybe he switches to another corner at some point. That's another thing, by the way, to keep an eye on. Ryan McMahon this year is going to see some action at first base. Zach Wilson told me that. A lot of this stuff is up. If you go to MILB.com, my Rockies prospect primer story is there. MILBperspective.com. I've got a ton of stuff on the blog, other stuff from Zach Wilson, so you can check that out. But, yeah, Ryan McMahon's going to be seeing time at third base. They're really, really high on Dom Nunez. He's going to go to Modesto this year, catching prospect. So there is – it's exciting to talk about these guys because there's so many of them.
Baseball Prospectus this morning, they ranked the Rockies farm system as the third best in baseball behind the Dodgers and the Braves. And the Braves, just they stole all their prospects from Arizona.
Right. So, could you imagine what the Diamondback system would look like?
Oh, my God. It would be stupid.
Would have been really good.
Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden they're like suing the city of Phoenix because they want a new ballpark or something. Yeah. The hell, they're just trying to do everything the Braves tell them to do. Why don't you, I don't know, why don't you give me, let's see, Touki Toussaint, and who else do I want? Dansby Swanson. Oh, and get yourself a new ballpark. Oh, yes, sir.
Aaron Blair, yeah.
Yeah, we'll take him, too. But,
I want you to, I want you to pat your head and rub your belly. I can't.
But yeah, it's I'm excited for this year because I feel like this is – I made this comparison. I was on the Sports Animal 1300 with Matt Polly, the assistant radio voice of the Colorado Springs Sky Sox this week, who actually is leaving. This just came across a few moments ago on Twitter.
Oh, it came across the wire.
For a job in Milwaukee. Big congratulations to Matt Polly. But the thing with this team for 2016 that I see them as – is the 2006 table setters. People remember the 2007 season. What people don't remember a lot of the time is that the Rockies were in first place in 2006 until like the middle part of that summer. And they had no business being there, but they played very, very well that season. And the table, I think, was set for 2007 because they remembered sort of what it was like. I mean, they obviously fell off. They ended up finishing in last place that year, but they were 76-86, which is so far better than what
on July 1st, they were 41-39.
Yeah. So they were playing good baseball.
They were 44-40 on July 5th of that year, 44-40. And then they went on a 8-game losing streak.
And then it all
and won 11 or lost 11 of 12.
Yeah.
And then it was over. But
not so fun.
Yes, it was. That team showed signs that they were about to break out.
Their last day in first place that season was July 5th. Yeah. They were tied for first place on July 5th at 44-40. And then, you know, then it all fell apart. But that was a really tight NL West that year. But that's what this team looks like to me this year. Not every piece is going to be in place, but the pieces that need to be in place, I think, are going to take big steps.
Yeah, I mean, that year it was Matt Holliday's breakout season, 34 homers, hit .326. Garrett Atkins had a huge year that year as well. That was his second full season, 29 homers, 120 driven in. He hit .329 that year. I mean, you see those kind of guys with the team right now. We're not saying the Rockies are going to be world beaters this year. And so we can go to the predictions part of this season preview right now. Rockies that year went 76-86, finished in fourth. Obviously, it's not how the season wanted to go, but it was, in that year, a 9-win improvement from the previous season. Now, a 9-win improvement from last season would put them right at 77 wins, which I think is very, very attainable this year for the Rockies. Obviously, things have to go right. Things have to go right for every team. But I think a 9-win improvement, which is similar to what we saw from 2005 to 2006, I think we can see that this year, and obviously 2006 was a precursor to 2007, where they won 90 games, a 14-win improvement, and obviously we know what happened in 2007. But I think this team has the signs, and I think they can be ready. Everyone has always said that 2017 was the year the Rockies would contend with all their prospects. I think we'll see the beginning of the bearings of the fruits of that labor this season, and then next year could be the year when they can really make an impact on a large scale.
I like it.
So I'm saying 70. I'm saying 77 wins.
Okay, I'll go 76 wins, and I'll say that it'll be exactly the same as 2006. You say it'll be a win better. I like it.
I say a 9-win improvement.
By the way, you mentioned Garrett Atkins a moment ago. 49 minutes ago, Garrett Atkins tweeted, quote, "Great night watching Carrie. Hashtag wheels up." And then a picture of Kerry Underwood that it appears he took from pretty good seats, but it also looks like he took with like maybe a Motorola Razor, because it's like the worst picture ever.
I thought you were gonna
say Garrett Atkins concert tonight.
Great night watching Kerry, and it's just Sissy Spacek covered in blood.
Oh man, that was a good one. That was a good one. Well done. Nicely set up. Yeah, I don't know, man. We're not gonna fool you into thinking the Rockies are gonna make the playoffs this year, but help is on the way. A lot of exciting stuff is on the way.
I think so. And the rotation, DLR, Lyles, or is DLR, Bettis, Lyles, Chatwood, and then X. Hopefully by the time they need a fifth starter, Gray can be back by that third week of the season. We will find out, I guess.
Threw a bullpen today, I believe, or was scheduled to throw a bullpen today, which is very, very quick. For coming off of something like an abdominal strain, but Looked like. Yeah.
He was
set to go today. So
we'll see. This is
all in mind.
I think it's going to be, well, it's definitely not a make or break here necessarily, but I think we need to see progress. I think that's the big thing for every Rockies fan. Rockies fans need to see progress. They need to see the now really second full year of the Jeff Bridish tenure start to take hold in positive ways, because last year there was not a lot of positive things at all aside from Nolan Arenado.
Certainly.
So I think they need to see it on more on a bigger scale this year. They need to see some pitchers take the next step. Chad Bettis have a good year. Maybe get John Gray some good starts near the end of the season once he gets back healthy. See Nolan Arenado continue to be Nolan Arenado. If Trevor Story comes up and impresses in the first couple of months like Clint Barmas did, nobody give him any deer meat.
Yeah, please, Todd Helton, stay far
away. Yeah. So I think if those things happen, if the bullpen is much improved, especially better than it was last year, which really couldn't be much worse. If the fastball guys, the Miguel Castros, the Jake McGees, if those guys come in and really show that something that the front office decided to do on purpose is going to work, which is get fastball guys, get strikeout inducing guys, things that the front office didn't just like back into. I think if they realize that these things are actually working, the process is working, I think you'll see a lot more, you know, real fans in the ballpark, and I think people will start to pick it up that this front office isn't the same old Dan O'Dowd regime. I think these people know what they're doing, and I think we will start to see that this season. If we don't, if things backslide this year, then we got to take a long, hard look at a lot of different things in this organization.
I'm going to leave you with this question. If the Rockies struggle to the tune of, let's say, a sub-70 win campaign. Now, let's even bump it up. Let's say a sub-72 win campaign. Do you think Walt Weiss's job is safe?
Only because it's so rare to have a manager fired on his without like him just walking away from a handshake agreement. I can't imagine that he would be safe. That would be what, 3 consecutive seasons with under 70, whatever wins, if you want to call it. I mean, that's 66 and 68 each of the last 2 years. He had 74 wins in his first year in 2013 with mostly a Jim Tracy team. I mean, if they finished with less than 70 wins, that would be 4 of the last 5 years with under 70 wins. And that is not, I don't think, acceptable, even though it's not like there's a history of winning with the Colorado Rockies. But I don't think in any job that would be acceptable.
I agree. He's a manager who is not hired by the current general manager. When Jeff Bridish was hired as general manager, he made it a big point. We want good communication. We want, you know, Walt to have input on the way the roster is constructed, whatever. But I also think if they continue to struggle, you know, Walt Weiss is a great guy. Walt Weiss is one of the nicest dudes in the world. I think the players like him. But does Jeff Bridish look at that and say, nah, this wasn't my guy, he's only under contract for this year, we got to go in a different direction?
They haven't finished any better than 18 games back of first place in the 3 years that Walt Weiss has been head of the Colorado Rockies.
You got to finish in the middle of the pack this year.
I think so. And at the NL West is very much improved. The Dodgers will always be there. The Giants revamped.
That's another tough thing.
And then the D-backs, they threw a lot of money, a lot of really, really good players. They're starting rotation could be very, very good with Greinke and Miller and Corbin and even De La Rosa at the back end.
Now, when you look at the way they started against me,
not in the show.
Knocked Corbin out today, I think in the 4th, and yesterday just whooped up on Zach Greinke.
So you're on rookie setting then, right?
You know what's crazy about video games now? They don't even have settings.
It's dynamic.
You have either veteran or rookie, so I'm on the veteran side. But yeah, it's dynamic. When you do something well, then it says difficulty increased. And that's amazing to me.
Yeah.
Video games, man.
It's pretty great. Crazy.
Also, just in case you're wondering, just as a final footnote, in case you're wondering why there is no Trevor Story, why there is no Kyle Freeland, why there is no Jeff Hoffman, you have to be, I believe, either a member of the 40-man roster or you have to have made your major league debut
that
to be
correct.
Featured in a video game because you are only covered by the MLB Players Association if you are one of those two categories. So in case you buy the show and you're wondering why,
give it a week. The rosters will update. You'll be able to download the new rosters. Story will be there on the opening day roster update that is given. So don't worry about that. You're welcome. The show, we're giving free props to you right now on our free podcast.
The Rockies do not wear a black vest with purple sleeves.
They did it once.
They wore that one time 10 years ago.
12 years
Please
ago.
Please change that. Yeah. Please change it.
But I always play with it because I just think it's hilarious.
It's so atrocious.
Yeah.
It's so bad. All right. I think that does it.
That's a, it for this week. That's the 2016 preview.
Season preview spectacular. All righty. Until next week, when Cameron Goldner joins.
That's going to be a fun
69th edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Enjoy your week. The final week before opening day.
Can't wait.
Bye.
Bye.
Stuff.
But at least you saw Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, totally. Here's my biggest beef with Batman versus Superman.
One of many, I assume.
One of like so many that I didn't even know where to begin complaining about it when I walked out of the theater. But the Daily Planet must be the worst run news organization to ever exist. Clark Kent is never anywhere to be found by his boss. He's like refusing assignments that his boss gives him because he wants to cover other stuff. And they just like let him do whatever the hell he wants. Like newspapers are falling apart left and right in this country. Who the hell is Clark Kent to just go out and start demanding the things that he wants to do? And then not showing up, like he's not at his desk. I can't get a hold of him. He's the worst reporter ever.
Yeah.
And I was not impressed with Lawrence Fishburne as his boss. I gotta be honest.
I think you would take a lot more. You know, I don't know. I don't know. You're terrible.